Hi everyone, it's Tim Emerson from Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm talking today with Jason Stein of jasonstein.com. I'm not sure how he came up with that name. Anyway, Jason and I are having some fun. Jason is going to talk to us about the pain of moving forward, why we stand in our own way, and what to do about it. I have known Jason for quite some time. In fact, I have worked with Jason extensively one-on-one. Those of you who have followed me and noticed the focus that I had around the healing equation of connection, clarity, coherence, and change, Jason helped me name those things and really nail that down. It was in my head, but it was kind of scattered all over. So he's really good at pulling things together. I also worked with Jason Stein when he was at Heart of Business, and since then he's been scouting on his own, and I'm sure doing an awesome job. So, Jason, I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. And so, for those of you that don't know me, just a couple bars on my background. I started as a doctor of Oriental medicine in the state of New Mexico. It's a really weird thing when you become an acupuncturist. They give you, after passing a board, primary care status. And right away, I got into a hospital, and I was in way over my head. This was about 20 years ago. And I realized that most people were getting sick from their working environment. And so over the last several decades, I've really learned more about entrepreneurship because I am a third-generation entrepreneur. My grandfather and father were entrepreneurs. And really, how do we do work in a way that doesn't make us sick? And my subspecialty is really working with wellness providers that really hate the business side. They got into wellness because they want to make the world a healthier place, but they just haven't figured out how to do it in a way that their business thrives in having their business be healthy as well. And so, Tim, thanks for having me here today. And if you're wondering why you should stay, I think it's because we all have wanted to do something where we were just stuck in moving forward. And we did. We thought it was painful. And this really dawned on me a little over a year ago when I had with my wife our third child. And what I noticed was that a baby just has no problem asking for help. Like, you know, his name is Cooper, and Cooper wants his diaper changed, he'll let you know. He wants to eat, he'll let you know. He's extremely tired, he'll let you know. And there's something happens over the years where the pain of moving forward, we begin to stand in our own way. So I really, Tim, just wanted to start to explore what was that and what's the timing. And most importantly, for you, the viewer, what can we do about it?
Right.
And what I began to notice was that my older son, he is 9 years older than the first child. So there's a gap in there. And really, when he was around 6 years old, he didn't have any trouble asking. He would say, "Can I have some ice cream?" And I would say, "No, it's breakfast time." And he would say, "Well, why not? And can I have some ice cream tomorrow, or can I have some tonight?" And it was like there was no hesitation in moving forward and getting his needs met. He knew what his need was, which, you know, was for a sweet treat, for comfort, and he wanted it right then. And eventually, he's 9 now, I see him getting in his own way. And I saw him at the skate park, and he was wanting to skateboard with a bunch of other people, and he was afraid to go over there and play with them. And so what happened? What happened between him being 6 and just being able to ask and ask and ask, and him being 9? And I'm just curious, Tim, any ideas of what you think happened?
You know, I've wondered this myself. At some place, we begin to become aware, and then we begin to become self-aware, and then with self-aware, somehow the doubts come in.
It's so crazy because I think the doubts come in when an authority figure tells us no.
Oh.
Like, when we get no, we get a little rejection. It's like when we're babies and everything's good, we get all the things we want all the time, and we're used to other people taking care of our needs.
Hmm.
And eventually there's a point of transition where we ask and someone just is tapped out, or they just don't have the time or the energy or even the resources to give us what we need. And we don't realize in that moment that we can give ourselves what we need. And so they say no, and we don't quite have it figured out. So we do one of two things in that position. The first thing we may do is that we just continue to ask and ask and ask and ask, and then the authority figure gets upset.
Hmm.
Like we'll see this definitely. You probably are listening all over the world, but my experience is in the education system in the United States. If you have a teacher that's asked too many questions, they'll eventually say, hey, pipe down, that's not appropriate, go figure it out yourself, we don't need that question here, and we begin to shut down.
Hmm.
So the other isn't over asking, but it's just shutting down right away, and we begin to have this self-doubt of maybe it's not okay to ask other people for support. So we begin to stand in our own way, and we start to go into these archetypes. You know, one archetype may be about the saboteur, where when we want to move forward, we start to get ahead and we just sabotage ourselves. You know, we've seen that happen. It's like you sitting in the chair that you're sitting in your personal experience may notice that when you're moving forward on nutrition and movement, let's just pick nutrition, where you're on a healthy nutrition plan. I'm purposely avoiding that word diet, Tim. So we're eating healthier foods and we're feeling better about our body. And the next thing you know, we're eating pizza and eating Snickers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, what happened where all of a sudden we got in our own way and our strategy was the saboteur keeps us safe.
Hmm.
Right?
Okay.
And so it may not in the bigger picture of our health and well-being, but it sure does in the picture of becoming more visible. So the question you want to start to ask yourself on the pain of moving forward, are you standing in your way, own way, is are your archetypes starting to pop up when you're becoming more visible?
You know, it's really interesting, Jason. So I'm a few years past nine, and and I've had a little bit of experience with this. And one of the things that I've noticed, I'll just share this with you. I mean, I just deal with it, but it's you know, as a business owner, I go to networking events regularly, and every time I do, I have the same conversation in my head every single time. And I know it's silly, and I do it again. And the conversation goes like this. Nobody's going to be interested in what I do. I'm really out of my league here. You know, they're not going to be interested in talking to me. They think what I do is stupid. And the other side of my head comes, you know, from my various coaches, Robert Middleton in particular. His voice in my head will say, now, do you know that? Is that really true?
You know? Right.
And I go, no, it's not really true. In fact, don't you always go to networking events and have interesting conversations and follow up? Yes. Isn't that likely to happen here too? Yes. Well, then go in there and network. So I go in there and I network, and having had this conversation in my head, and I'm really hesitant, and I walk in and I have great conversations and I meet new people and I follow up and everything is fine. Jason, I do it every single time.
Right. And I think that this is inherently in your wiring. And I think that people are doing a lot of processes to think that they can just overcome who they are organically. And it doesn't work that way.
Hmm.
So we spend an awful lot of money in self-help and processing for things that don't work. And I truly believe the older you and I get, Tim, the more wise we get that there's a volume control. So the archetype that you're talking about, I would name that the fool.
Ah.
So there's this feeling of incompetence when you're going to these meetings and the fool comes up and says, oh God, what am I doing? And I don't have enough information. And am I going to present myself right? And then ultimately what happens is you start to question your own knowledge, and somewhere in you, you feel like if you just go to 100 more networking events, that's going to go away, rather than it may or may not, but it's what's coming up.
Right.
So the fact that you're in pain when that thought comes up, but you're moving forward, is you not standing in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beautiful thing, is most people, I've actually had clients that get to the car and they're in front of the networking meeting and their own fool allows them to stay in the car and drive home without going inside.
Yeah.
So for the audience, you really want to start to see, this boils down to two things in my world, because I'm an entrepreneur and I work with entrepreneurs: visibility and money.
Okay.
Standing in your own way on the path of moving forward is painful, because generally we don't want to be too visible. People that are visible, you just look at social media these days. If you're visual, if you're visible about an opinion, the hecklers are going to come out and eat you alive.
You know, it's funny. My grandfather used to say, Tim, the only people who don't get criticized are people who never do anything.
Right. Right. And it's interesting, if you, the listener, thinks about, is it more painful to sit in the not doing anything or to move forward? It's going to be more painful to sit in not doing anything, but you keep thinking, well, the pain shouldn't be there, so I'll just wait till it leaves. And it's never, it's, as Tim's saying, after so many network meetings, that's still there. But there's hope. And the hope is, Tim, you've learned the volume control on it. So it used to scream, and now it's kind of like, oh, that's there again.
Yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't stop you. And so I want to think about another couple of archetypes, because you're gonna hear yourself in these, and you're going to be able to figure out what to do about it next. You know, one of the other archetypes that I see with visibility and money is really the rebel.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know your audience, so excuse my profanity, but the rebel is kind of like, fuck you, you can't make me, and I don't want to. Right? And so the beautiful thing in the rebel moving forward is that there are many rebels that are moving forward with causes they find important that are really about humanity, and they have to be seen. They have to be visible.
Right.
But if they go to the shadow side of the rebel, all of a sudden there becomes an ego and an arrogance that alienates people, rather than saying, we're all on this journey together.
Okay.
And let's talk about one more. And this is like the person, the archetype is the fear of rejection. It's just, you know, there was a time where my son had zero fear of rejection. No, 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 no. Then there was a time he moved into, well, I think you're going to say no, but I'm going to ask anyway. And then I started noticing him not asking at all.
Yeah.
And I think for many of the adults that are listening today, there's things that we want to ask of other people and ourselves that we're not, for fear of the rejection of it. What if I make a new goal, but I don't achieve it? What if I ask them for help and they say no? And that's really painful to think about. It's a lot less painful to do. But we don't have the rationality in our wiring to say, well, just moving forward with it is still going to be painful, but I'll be able to get myself out of my own way.
Yeah, I would, even more than that, Jason, curious what you think about this. I even think we start to lie to ourselves. So, you know, for One of my excuses with networking is I was, I don't know, I'm just not good at this. And, then that Robert's voice in my head is like, Tim, nobody's good at something they haven't done before, right? And so you look at kids when they are young, you ask them, what do you want, what do you want for Christmas? And like, oh, I want this and this, and I want
Right.
a house and a car and a pony, a real one. And I want, and they don't shut up for a day. And then you ask an adult, so what do you want for Christmas? I don't know. Let me think about it. Maybe a sweater, maybe
Right.
socks. Honestly, that's the height of your passion. I don't believe it.
Yeah. No, I agree with what your statements, and I say we lie to ourselves to try to alleviate some of the pain of not moving forward. Many people have dreams that are just locked away and hidden in closets inside of their heart somewhere. And what I would say is that there's a lot of reasons why. One of those reasons is you may have tried to scale too far. That often, if we have big dreams and we try to digest them too quickly and we try to scale too far too fast, it's like a rubber band approach where we snap back into a place that just is painful and we don't want to experience that reaching anymore, right? So when I work with people, I think it's really important to get really good at simple, small steps forward, as opposed to the big, audacious steps. How do you take simple, small steps? How do you pick up the phone and ask someone what you're wanting to ask them? How do you be honest with yourself and say, this is something I want to move forward, and as opposed to getting it today, here's one simple step I can take. Now, in my world, I believe people are, especially now with the internet, reading too much, processing too much, and being way too sensitive to move forward.
I have a trick that I share with people.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I don't coach many business people. I just once in a while, when somebody really has something I can help them with, but also just time management. They like you say, there's all these things to do. You can't possibly do them. And I said, well, write them all down. And then when they're done with that, okay, now we're going to make a not doing now list. And put most of the stuff on your not doing now list. It's out of your head. It's not gone. You won't forget. But put it on this list of not doing now. And instead of trying to do 10,000 things, we're going to pick two, maybe three things that you're going to focus on because they make the most sense. We're going to do them well. And the rest of the stuff, I'm not doing that right now.
Yeah, I like it. I think the important thing to note about everything that Tim, you and I are talking about is the wiring. And so a little bit of biochemistry can go a long way. And what I know about brain chemistry is that this asking thing that we're talking about and the moving forward thing we're talking about, we have this part of our brain that many neuro researchers are saying is the fight or flight. It's the amygdala, right? So
Right.
it's really dealing with the past behaviors. And it's amazing to think that even if it's subconscious, something that I stopped doing when I was six is still in the wiring. The amygdala can sense it. It resonates with it. So we have to get to a different part of the brain. This is why, Tony Robbins stuff works or anything that brings you to the present moment. It's why sweat lodges work. It's why anything that helps you to say, I know I have a past. I know I'm stuck there. How can I bring this to a different part of the brain, to the frontal lobe, to say this is a new experience that I'm having right now, and how can I make some movement in it now rather than thinking about it and relating to it and associating it to everything from our past behaviors?
Nice.
When I have a client that's super stuck with making more money, and it does happen, I refer them to something called EMDR, which is rapid eye movement therapy. And what I find is that if you're locked into something, it may be that you need a therapist that can help you unlock those doors. It can happen with healing too, Tim. I know that some of the healing you do, you absolutely take people out of their past and you bring them into the present moment.
Right.
But if you aren't doing that, then what you're doing is you're reading more, you're getting bogged down, you're starting to compare yourself to other people, and it's too much. So you will get, you know, frozen. And that's the interesting thing about new neuroscience, is saying it's not just flight or fight. It's fight, flight, or freeze. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of with anxiety right now, that people are feeling the pain of moving forward and standing in their own way because the anxiety levels are getting too high. Making this phone call or going to this event or going out on a date or, you know, expanding yourself out of your comfort zone is super painful because the anxiety is there.
Okay.
There's two ways through the anxiety. One way, to work with a healer and unlock that pattern and wiring. The other way is jump. Like, just take the step, right?
Right. The Nike approach.
Yeah, so that's my approach, is just do it. Like, you can talk about why you're not doing it. You can associate with why you're not doing it. And if it's a simple, small step, what I'll say to you is do it and then tell me about it.
There's
And people may feel like, you know, oh my God, that's so hot. It's so painful. It's so uncomfortable. It's so awkward. And, you know, I come from my background. I've studied with Native Americans, and the Native Americans here in the U.S. do sweat lodges, and the sweat lodges get so hot that the only way through the sweat lodge is to pray and to surrender and to accept. And so you have to accept as the listener that you're kind of messed up, because I'm kind of messed up. And as messy human beings, the only way through is with movement. Because anything, and I really want the audience to get this, anything that's stagnant for too long, like if you have dreams and you're not moving forward, or if there's someone that you like and you're not asking them on a first date, anything that stagnates too long dies. And so you're either dying to live or you're living to die.
Dying to live or living to die. Who was it? I forgot who said this once, but I actually do remember, speaking of Native Americans, it was Don Miguel Ruiz, in somewhere in the Four Agreements. He says most people, it's not, you know, most people aren't afraid to die. Most people are afraid to live.
I think that's true. I think that most people, and again, I keep referencing the United States because it's my point of reference, and I know that you do have listeners around the world. You know, with the United States, most people right now are staying in jobs that they hate because of the health benefits that are really not that good. And it's a complete game. So we have to get out of our own game. We have to start to create a new way of living. And that can be as simple for you, the listener, to think about what did you dream about as a child, or what did you used to do that you no longer do that gave you great joy? And just begin there.
Yeah. I know, it's interesting. Alex Basley, who is also in this summit, talks about, you know, what if your big dreams are an important part of who you are and your path forward?
Yeah. Yeah. And so my formula for success is really a few things. One is you have to know that the self-doubt's included. Like, it's just, you can't wait for it to turn off, because it's going to be there. For myself included, for Tim, for anyone that you see that's maybe an influencer or a person of power, for Oprah, like, the self-doubt's there. They just know how to play with it. The second is, you got to get yourself in a supportive community. If the people around you are saying, well, yeah, you shouldn't think about that, that's crazy, or that's dangerous, or stay safe, like, don't get outside your box, then it's time to get in your community, right? Mm-hmm. And the third thing is, you got to get some accountability. So don't keep all those little simple steps inside of you. Find at least one other person you can share them with, so that there's someone tracking with you of, oh, you know, you said you wanted to do that and you did it. Let's celebrate. Or you said you wanted to do that and you didn't do it. Let's reevaluate. But you're not doing it alone, because what you're struggling with, you may think is like an isolated situation, but I can almost guarantee other human beings can relate to exactly where you are,
right,
even if it includes addiction or suicidal ideation,
right,
or whatever else, that you feel like you're totally alone. You are not alone. Like,
right,
we are human beings and we experience the same thing.
Right. You know, I was actually at a small networking event, 24 people. It was set up deliberately that way. So, you know, no pressure, 24 people, right? Piece of cake. And I noticed I was hanging out on the outskirts, and like, people could, it's like, and then I noticed something else, Jason. This is why I bring it up. I noticed everybody else is hanging out on the outskirts too. Everybody else is going through the same thing in their head that you're going through. Get in there and make somebody's life easier. Go say hello. So like you say, that self-doubt is included. When I was a musician, students used to ask, you know, how do you deal with stage fright when you're, you know, when you're standing up there, you got this big solo and there's 3,000 people listening. And I said, well, there's one way to overcome nervousness, and that is to not give a shit. But if you're going to care about what you're doing, you're going to get nervous, and you just have to learn to play well enough that you can play when you're nervous.
Well, and I think even if you give a shit, that you know you give a shit, and that that's okay too.
Yeah.
Like, I have a client, and my client teaches mindfulness in music, and her research shows her that 90% of professional musicians take beta blockers.
Yeah, classical musicians can often live on them.
Yeah. That's her audience, is classical musicians. And so to know that 90% of the classical musicians there are so scared that they're taking drugs to alleviate the pain, there's really some conversation there. There's a conversation to be had.
Right. There's some stories about people in large orchestras, you know, who are so scared as new players, and sitting in the violin section, that they'll use soap instead of rosin on their bow. So that they don't make any noise.
Yeah, you know, I think that there is a pressure to show up a certain way, and the pressure, believe it or not, is self-imposed. That's the kind of the joke in the whole thing, is that most people are thinking about themselves, but we're thinking about, are we negatively impacting other people, or are we being a contribution, yes or no, or whatever pressure we're putting on ourselves.
Hmm.
And so there's a real opportunity to get outside of that, to say, oh, wow, everybody's kind of wondering about themselves and thinking about themselves. I can just be more me. And I truly believe, like, for anyone that becomes 10%, 20% more themselves, they are going to be a magnet for the people around them, because there's something about being yourself that gives you total freedom. You know, total freedom. Like for me right now, Tim, my wife and I are doing Truth or Dare in Business every night on Facebook Live. And you can't make it up, right? There's no script of like, well, here's the truth or dares I will do, and here's the truth or dares I won't do. So it is totally freeing, because, you know, you never know. And you haven't met my wife, but you never know what's going to come out of her mouth. And I'm sure she says the same about me. So it's a way to just have fun. And if you don't know where to begin, do a Facebook Live and put only me, and allow yourself to do one on camera just for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a couple more minutes. Any questions or comments, Tim, about what we're talking about?
No, there's a lot of things I've just going around in my, in my head. And one idea I actually wanted to come back to, we kind of flirted past it, about the pressure being self-imposed, and it's like, be more me, but also the idea of service. You know, that when, you know, when there's a cause, we move forward, or when there's, you know, when there's, when we're the motivation is helping other people, that it helps us get out of ourselves and move forward, because we're needed in that regard. And if we stay and play safe, we can't be of service.
Yeah, I think it's a good conversation to include. And the number one human need in the world for any human being is to be a contribution. And by being a contribution to others, we meet that other need of being belonging. You know, we belong if we're a contribution to other people. So I do feel like, yes, that is a avenue. If you're really stuck, ask yourself, how can I get into my own ministry? What would that be about? And how do I want to serve? You know, for me personally, my ministry is really entrepreneurs that want the world to be a healthier place.
Right.
Like, I want to help them because they're good at healing and they're good at helping others, and they're often really not good at the business side. And so how can they learn those skills and enjoy them so they get to be more sustainable and help more people?
Yeah. It reminds me of something that I heard Bill Barron do talk about once in a speech. He said, you know, it would be, if you right now in this room, where we can all see you, if you were to hide while we can all see you, that would just be silly. He goes, it's even more silly to hide from people who can't see you. And yet, that's what we do. I'm hiding from these people. Yeah. I don't want to be visible. You know, if I were visible, then, you know, something would happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the visibility and the money piece is where I'm headed to do more work there for myself and for other people. Because I do believe that there is a certain amount of pain that comes with visibility. But then I really think for me and my, you know, I'll be 50 in a couple of years, and I think that we think visibility can be painful and painful things can be bad. And that's where it goes sideways. We have to start to learn that pain can be really healthy, and that we don't want excruciating, bone crushing pain, but some uncomfortability and awkwardness throws us out of our comfort zone and helps us be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, I just want to thank you for having me today.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm so glad that you could, you know, take a few moments and jump in here. There was something else I wanted to ask you, and now I'm going to be embarrassed by on tape going, what was it? it was about the visibility discussion. I was just thinking about in terms of moving forward, like, for example, in a healing business means, you know, standing up, what would people think? It's like, if you don't stand up and have those conversations, it can't possibly move forward. You have to stand up and be visible. So what would, you know, but certainly it's a very real pain. I remember what it was now. So because it's a very real pain, often what people want to do, especially those of us, you know, into the more new agey kind of interpretation of life, is, well, I'll just wait for the universe. And if I'm meant to do it, it will happen. And spirituality is a very important part of my life. And I start every day with meditation and reading and, et cetera, et cetera. But when someone says, you know, I'll just wait, and the universe will bring me the clients or the you know, whatever the dream is, and that way, I wait for a calm moment, and the best I can, without making them hang up on me all offended, is I tell them bullshit. That isn't going to happen.
Well, I taught at graduate school at one of the top acupuncture colleges in the nation for a decade. And what I can say after working with over 700 acupuncture students that went into private practice, at least over 90% of them went into private practice, is There is usually a wild card, and that means out of every 100 people, there's one person that's a Pied Piper, and they are able to do whatever they want, and they are able to be visible or even not visible, and they always have an abundance come to them. I think the challenge with that is following their model isn't reproducible. And so for the rest of us, what is reproducible is not waiting for it to happen, but to be a participant in it happening too. And I think that probably those people just have such clarity that it's all going to work out all the time. They don't tend to be anxious. And so they're a conduit or a catalyst. Now, they could tell us, like, this is how I do it, but I don't think that's reproducible for most people. Like me, I'm a bit of an anxious guy, and I always will be. Like, I have a plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, and it's just how I roll. Now, what I also know about that is that visibility to me, I could create it. So, like, if, like you, I don't really like network meetings in the place of the beginning of them. Like, I have the same thoughts of, like, I know that this is a part of my business structure, and I really like people and I like meeting people. And so what I do is I get playful about how can I work with this energy, but also make it work for me. Mm-hmm. And so what I've done in that scenario, Tim, is I've become a speaker for a local community of, like, I think they have 25 different chapter of groups. And as opposed to me going to the same group, I give speeches, I give talks, mm-hmm. and I get to go to group to group to group. Mm-hmm. And a couple things happen. One is I get to be the authority on the topics that I'm talking about that I really enjoy, and I do have kind of experience and credibility there. Mm-hmm. And two, it allows me to go through the experience of not knowing people and getting to know them again and again and again. Right. So for me personally, I think if you're really struggling with the visibility and you're waiting for kind of, you've hung out your shingle and you're waiting for people to just come to you, I would challenge you and say, create some activity. And if you move in any direction, you might be surprised at what comes back to you, even if it's unexpected and a positive.
Right.
Because what I find again and again with these students that I've talked about, they'll start a marketing plan and people will come to them that they weren't anticipating. Say they want to specialize in infertility, and then they get men with low back pain, you know. But what I did find is there's a direct correlation between action and the return on the action.
Right. So if we were to construct a, you know, a lot of our examples here, because of who we are and who we see most of the time, are about entrepreneurs. If we were to construct a series of steps for somebody who had, you know, says, well, you know, I have this different dream, I have this different other than starting the business, but I feel stuck. How could we take some of this, and what would be the steps for them to go from I'm stuck, I can't move forward, to wee, look at me?
Yeah. So the first would be, you know, the spiritual path of I'm stuck, and then getting into a place of acceptance and surrender. So that's like the first place is really I'm stuck, and you are stuck. And so take a little bit of time to create some spaciousness around being stuck. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to move right away, right? So the first is the spiritual. The second is the emotion. How does it feel to be stuck? Like, really get the amount of pain that's being created that you're shutting off from. People completely numb out. They'll numb out with screens. They'll numb out with, you know, drugs and alcohol. They'll numb out with lots of things to not feel the emotion. So spiritual first, emotion second, physical third. Get in motion and take one simple step forward. SEP.
I like it. Let me ask you about these. So when I think of spiritual path and acceptance and surrender, a couple of things come to mind. One is the importance of meditation as a way to do that. And the other is, you look at the remarkable stories that some people have had of remarkable healings. I've always struck by the very first thing they did was they made a peace at where they are. They didn't say, I'm going to cure this. They just said, you know what? It's all right. And the changes happened after that. Go ahead.
The first part with spirituality, the deepest sense of being spiritual is really connecting your heart to something greater and accepting what is.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. Accepting whatever's going on with yourself. You know, I can be really fucking messy sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if I don't accept it, I just spin out. I just spin and spin and spin. But if I get to acceptance and I'm like, oh yeah, that's me doing my thing that I don't really like.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden there's a little bit of breathing space. And the way to do this for me personally that I highly recommend is you got to have a daily spiritual practice. And I meditate every morning. I use Headspace. And I do it because, you know, eventually, you know, the shit's going to hit the fan with something, whether it's a loss in the family or a financial upheaval. And if you're doing your spiritual practice, you can weather the storm. But if you just all of a sudden all of it happens and you don't have any access to acceptance, it becomes really, really tough.
Yeah. And I think that helps with the second point, emotion. I have been, this will sound funny at first to listeners, but I have been blessed with situations in which I had no good options. It felt horrible. I had to move forward. It felt like walking through a wall of fire. The only thing I had was that spiritual connection. It's like, I have no other options. I'm just going to have to trust this, walk through the wall of fire. And I, on the other side, it's like, okay, this is better. And so when I come to those things now, I come to it with the experience of having done this a few times. And it's like, you know, as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't mean I feel any better about it, but I'm like, this is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, that's the emotion and that's self-compassion. Right? It's like giving yourself some compassion of like, oh, I know this kind of hurts, but I also know the experience, and this is part of the journey.
Right.
You know, I really believe, I used to teach nonviolent communication, and I truly believe there's beings that are born that just have greater levels of compassion than others.
Mm-hmm.
But compassion can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was not a very compassionate guy in my young teens and into my 20s. And it was a skill set that even to this day, I have to really work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three kids. My oldest daughter's almost 14. And there's times where she'll do something that I would say is stupid, right? And mm-hmm. my go-to is don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent, there's no part of that that's helpful for right. the child or for the relationship between us.
Right.
And if I can come to it and I'm less hypocritical and I'm like, oh, I've totally done that and I can accept that and I really, that must really hurt. It's a whole other game. So spiritual, emotion, and then physical, you got to move. You can't just do the emotional work. Like, I think in the modern age, many people in our community, Tim, get stuck in the emotion.
Right.
And it doesn't go to the next step.
Right.
So in nonviolent communication, a lot of people will use it and they'll get to compassion for each other's emotions. And then they never get to a need or request. And you got to get down to the request because that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I love about the tying the physical to emotion. I work a lot with people who are in long-term pain, who, you know, nothing has worked. And we work them through the pain, but I also tell them, if you have long-term chronic pain, you have inflation, and you have to move. That it's not an option. You have to, or it will get worse and stiffer. There is no option. And your body's going to say no, and you're just going to have to say, well, yes. there's no way around it.
Yeah.
The same thing is true of, I think, physical manifestation. And I think that sometimes we create these whole castles and imaginary things around them, when one of the greatest things I ever heard on this, you want to know how to physically manifest? He goes, open your calendar, write it down on a specific time and day. There, physical manifestation has begun.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, you know, that's like the old saying that, you know, an architect would never build a building just out of their mind. They actually make a draft. And with the draft, it becomes from the ethers to a manifestation of reality. And then from that draft picture, it becomes a physical structure. And so we can do that too. It's like, I would almost guarantee that people think about doing movement and taking action, you know, 100 times more than they're actually thinking and taking action.
Right. Yeah. You know, the other thing about emotion and taking action, you mentioned earlier Tony Robbins, and I remember hearing Tony Robbins talk about the Dickens technique.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
So it's like, you know, Charles Dickens' The Christmas Carol, where he has the ghost and a past, present, and future, and it changes him. And so he says, I'm going to get the particulars messed up, but it's something like this. If you continued on your current path, where would you be in a year? What would that feel like? Where would you be in 5 years? What would that feel like? And you take some time and you write it down and you really get into that. Where would you be in 10 years on your current path? And what would that feel like? And you write it down. Where would you be in 20 years? And you write it down and you really get in that space, you know? And you just feel like we tend to think of what will be the consequences if I move, and we forget that there are consequences to not moving. And really get, you know, and it has to force the decision, but you really work on good knowledge of this. If I don't move, this is where this is taking me. And then,
well, I think that's where
you do the same for what if you do move. Yeah.
Right. We can take a look, actually, not only for the future of what can happen, but we can look in the past of what has happened. So a couple of years ago, my daughter plays basketball, and she really enjoys it. But in the beginning of playing it, she wasn't very good at it. And she wanted to get better. So her team had played for 2 years in a row in the fall. And there was a team in the spring league that wasn't her team that wanted her to come play with them. And so she said yes, and I drove her to practice, and she's like, I don't want to do it. I was like, what are you saying? And she said, well, I don't know those people. They're not my teammates. I know you drove me here, but I don't want to do it. And it was a moment for both of us as a parent and as a child that I said, I totally get you don't want to do it. And you have to go to practice. And after practice, if you don't want to do it, I promise you, you don't have to go back. Hmm. And she went, and some of those players became friends, and she enjoyed the entire season, and she got better and better.
Right.
So it's just one of those lessons. There's so many things that we don't want to do, and if we did, they would be the best thing for us.
I think we can forget that, you know, it's to change things, by definition, means going outside of our comfort zone, because it means doing things we haven't done before. And by definition, the outside of the comfort zone is not comfortable.
Well, I agree. And I think that, you know, technology has created even more safety, where you can be sitting at home listening to this, you know, podcast without ever doing anything. You could actually get online, and you could be for or against different arguments. You could actually be for or against protests. You could be for or against anything without leaving your home. And I think these days, the screens and the addiction to screens is causing a safety zone for us to not live our own life.
Mm.
So an example for me, I love movies. And it used to be that I would go get a VHS and I would watch a movie. Nowadays, you can get HBO, Showtime, and really 1,000 other channels. And there, you could spend the rest of your life watching movies 24 hours a day and never watch all the movies ever made.
Right.
And so the reason that I do a lot of video in my business, like every Monday morning I create a video, is because that's creation rather than just reception.
Hmm.
And so for the listeners, I'm going to end with this, and that is, think about your areas of your own healing. Think about your dreams that you want to create. And as opposed to studying it more or learning more about it or reading another book or listening to another podcast like this one, I invite you to take one action forward. Drop the mic. That's what I got.
That's great. I'll just add to that as like one of the most valuable parts of this for me, Jason, was the sharing that that I think people can forget, which is this is not something that simply the listeners are dealing with. It's something that every human on earth deals with.
Yeah. So I want to say thanks for having me, Tim. If
thank
you've
you,
made
Jason.
It all the way to the end of this podcast, thank you for listening. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And those of you who are interested in Jason and his work, you can find him at jasonstein.com. I don't know how he came up with that. So.
All right. You guys have a great day.
Thank you so much, Jason. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, some really cool things from Jason Stein here on the pain of moving forward, why we stand in our own way, and what to do about it. Jason made the observation early on that, many cases work was making us sick, and that something was wrong with the way that we were handling things. He noticed that his own children, from a baby to age 6 would have no problem asking for things. But then around 9 years, suddenly he was standing in his way again. He didn't want to ask. Jason suggests that, around there we start to ask and we hear no. And that happens enough time and it upsets us and we kind of learn to stop asking and start to shut down. So he talked about different archetypes that we can start to take on when we're in that situation. So one of these is the saboteur. The one who keeps sabotaging self because it keeps us safe. Another one is the fool, afraid we're going to be incompetent, so we start to question our own knowledge. Another one was the rebel, I don't want to, you can't make me, or, the shadow side of that is the ego and arrogance that comes with that. Yet another one was the fear of rejection, where, we even lie to ourselves to alleviate the pain. We decide I don't really want that, right? Because I'm afraid that it will be rejected. So Jason points out that a lot of this is really about what he talked about was visibility and money. And we really focused on the visibility part of that, which is that, I don't want to be visible because then I'm vulnerable. And the key, he said, about his not standing in our own way, is, the way to bring hope to this is to learn to turn down the volume on these things. It's not necessarily that it ever goes away, but we can turn it down. And Jason suggests that so many people have lost their dreams, that they are, in fact, locked away somewhere for various reasons, or maybe in some cases we started growing too fast, and so like a big rubber band, we snap back. So Jason focuses on, we take small, simple steps and take one simple step to move forward. He talked about kind of the wiring of our brain chemistry. So we've often heard about the fight or flight of our primitive brain. To change that brain part, we have to bring it into the present moment. So out of the fear of what's about to happen. And so Jason likes to frame this as fight or flight or free, that's actually a healing process. that we go through to get free of this. I really, really love that. But, you know, we have a lot of high anxiety, you know, about making that call or attending that event or going on this date or doing such and such an expansion. And it's painful. We feel that as pain anyway. So the way's through. He says one way is to, you know, work with a healer and come is in the present that moment and learn to let go of some of these things. And another way is to just jump, just do it, which is, painful, but there's rewards on the other side. He used the example of a Native American sweat lodge. It gets so hot, he says, that the only way through is to pray, surrender, and accept. You know, the reality is it, and, you know, for the most part, we're messed up. That's why we have emotional challenges. But the thing to do is, you know, not to stay still, but movement. Movement is actually the key to the healing, because anything that's stagnant dies. Jason says we are we're dying to live, or else we're living to die. So you know, if we're afraid to live, what happens to our big dreams? So we get wrapped up in self-doubt. So we have to learn how to play with it. He says we have to learn to have a supportive community around us that can, you know, encourage us and nurture us. We need to have accountability, so that we don't just keep letting things go, that there's somebody who could say, hey, you know, I thought you were going to do this. We need to understand that the pressure is self-imposed. It's not coming from outside. It's not coming from someone else. Because we need to, you know, in each case, we need to be more me. And that when each of us can be more me, we become a magnet. We experience a new kind of freedom. Another way we talked about was being of service. When we're being of service, when when we make a contribution, we have a better sense of belonging, and that is a way out of self and of the pain as well. If we hide, we're not visible, and we just keep re-experiencing the pain. You know, the reality is that if we're afraid to leave our comfort zone, that's its own kind of uncomfortability. So sometimes we think that if we just stay there, things will happen by themselves. And that can, you know, he says that can happen in rare cases, but it's not really typical, the thing. There needs to be some sort of activity. Action creates a turn. And he really hit that part hard several times, that we need to take an action, and then we can expect some sort of return in some way. So I asked him at the end, can you give me basic steps? A lot of the examples he used, because it's the work he does, was for entrepreneurs. But what are steps anyone could use who's stuck in whatever kind of emotional state? And he says, well, there are three. The first one is to have a spiritual path, to learn acceptance and surrender, something greater than ourselves. The second is emotional, working, feeling self-compassion. Instead of numbing out, that we feel things and learn to work through them. We talked about the Dickens technique of, if I stayed here, where would I be? How would I feel in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, versus how I would feel if I took action? And then the third one is the physical, the motion, and the importance of take an action. Decide what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and then do it. He says, we can even look at the past, too. And he talked about his daughter's experience with basketball and took her to this new team. And she said, I don't want to do it. I don't know these people. These aren't our friends. And they actually became her greatest friends. So we can draw from that. And he said, you know, one of the things today, we have a kind of a technological safety zone. We can do everything hiding away, with very limited, only really kind of a virtual visibility. And it can keep us hiding. Daily spiritual practice, feel the emotional states we're in, and take an action. Maybe that action is getting help and healing. Maybe that action is just move. But, it's one of those things where if we want to make changes, we need to make changes. So I really enjoyed talking with Jason today. I hope you enjoyed our chat as well. If you want to learn more about Jason, you can find him at jasonstein.com. That's JASONSTEIN.com. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Talk to you soon.